Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, back from the other side of the pond, Tom Bogert. Tom, what's up? I mean, have any pints? Pints? I started really well there. How are your mates? How are things going over there where, you know, things, soccer is real, but it's football and some people love Jesse and everybody
else. Was this like Georgi Mihailovic's trip where it was like you needed to prove to yourself that you could compete day in and day out at like a journal level, like a true journal, not a journalist, right? But like a true journal.
Yeah. No, it was good. The pints are good. I can assure you the pints are good and the pubs are good. I was making sure to investigate as much as I could. No, I studied abroad when I was in college in London. Do you want me to take it from here for the rest of the show? I can monologue it and talk about my trips and other
unintended. Did you go to Barcelona or no?
Yeah, that's all that joke was coming. Yeah, no, so I love London. It's just a phenomenal place and got to go to Leeds United versus Manchester United. That was awesome. Seats ended up being, it's like in the lead section, not the lead fan section, but like, you know how they separate between the away fans. We were like, I was the first seat in from the fence. I was like, well, I hope nobody throws a battery at my head. Thankfully, nobody did. And they were, the sport was really good. It was cool. The crowd went wild at those two McKinney and Adams tackles that have been making the rounds on social media. And then it got significantly more quiet once United scored.
Once people found out you were American among the lead supporters, were there lots, and a journalist, a journo for that matter, were there lots of Jesse Marsh questions? Did you bear the brunt of maybe their acrimony, if they have any, against Jesse? Or was that sort of out of sight, out of mind?
I wasn't going around like, hey, do you guys know who I am? I'm Tom Bogert. I'm Tommy Scoops. I do Extra Time and other MLS stuff.
So people didn't recognize the mustache?
No, me being a journalist didn't really come up in the regular sections. But somebody was like, so what made you like, yo, you're like, why are you at Leeds or whatever? And I was like, oh, the Americans, like, whatever. We wanted to come see. The guy was like, well, what happens when they leave? I was like, I don't know. I probably won't come to Leeds anymore.
We leave too. We all used to be Everton fans, remember?
We burned the jersey. 9 days until MLS is back, by the way. Congratulations on your wonderful sojourn to London, Tom. We are back into it. Into the breach we go. 9 days, February 25th. Opening day, Nashville NYCFC starts the thing off. A big Saturday night. Of course, you have, now we know, MLS 360, the MLS countdown pregame, MLS wrap-up, the postgame show, MLS season pass on Apple TV. You've heard us wax poetic. We're going to do it again, and I'm going to tell you the prices again because we're going to beat you over the head with this because, let's be fair, if you're listening to this show, you need it. $79 a season if you're an Apple TV Plus subscriber. Maybe you're a big Ted Lasso fan, so you're already in the ecosystem, so to speak. $99 a season as a lump sum if you're not an Apple TV Plus subscriber, or $14.99 a month. I'll again just encourage you, just because I care about your budget. If you want this, just pay the lump sum. Do the math. 12 times 15 is more than $99. It's very simple. Just go get this done, and guess who's going to be on MLS Season Pass? People can't see us yet, guys, but you can raise your hands or say Extra Time. MLS Season Pass. We're coming back next Tuesday. Woo! We'll be there. And on YouTube, if you prefer YouTube, it's up to you. Should be a good time. We'll start with the remote studio, but we'll be back in the studio soon in person. I saw the studios last night. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I'm going to assume that nobody's going to check me on this. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be sick. It's going to be wonderful to see your faces once again. And we'll do the thing, as they say. Next Tuesday, ETR award predictions, golden boot draft. Next Thursday, ETR trophy draft, and the week one preview. We'll get you jacked up for it. And we will, as Jaspel asked for on Twitter, we'll put out a full table of our East and West-based predictions, and Anders will try to cobble together whatever it is that we say at the end of these team-based previews. It makes no sense, but he'll have to do the math. He'll have to figure it out. All right, let's get into it. We're wearing jerseys on this show. Some of you can see it on the clips. Other views are listening and you can't see it. I've got the Red Bulls kit. They're calling it the Moldy Cheese kit on Twitter, which, you know what? Except whatever moniker gets thrown your way. I think this is sick. It's the Daniel Patrick kick. You got the yellow and blue that throws back to BWP and Thierry Henry. When I pick it up and look at it in front of me, I'm like, this is so sick. I love this jersey. When I put it on, I don't know if it's because they say it's all about New York City's rich streetwear culture. Maybe that just doesn't fit with me anymore. 2 years in Kansas City.
You're a Jersey suburbs guy.
Yeah, and I'm a dad.
Yeah.
And I've been in the Midwest. I just like put it on and I'm like, this is not as cool as it was when it was not on me. But I've seen a lot of sort of, I don't know, some critiques on Twitter. But I really like the yellow. I like the blue. I like the red accents. I think it looks great. And I love it's a throwback to history. So
critiques of the jersey or critiques of you?
Any and all. So if you'd like to critique me on Twitter, I guess it's on video now. I'm no longer in a bathroom, but I am set up on a card table in my bedroom for better sound quality for you. Dave, I got to say, though, what you're rocking here, I wish I would have got that one, too. That's a little Atlantic Cup right here. That's DC with the cherry blossoms. That is sick.
DC loves me, baby. That's why they actually requested. They said we'd love David to be one of our initial models for the cherry blossom kit. Obviously, it is an iconic thing. In Washington, D.C., it's like, what, 5 weeks every spring where the cherry blossoms bloom all around the waterfront in downtown D.C., or sorry, the tidal pool. I wouldn't want to make a mistake about my city, Washington, D.C. this jersey's epic. I'm pretty sure fans have been asking for it for 26
ever?
Years.
I was going to say,
yeah, forever.
Right there. Yeah.
26 years, and now they finally got it, and I'm pretty stoked for the fans to be able to get this. I think it's going to look sick on the field. I mean, look at me right now.
Yeah, the nice thing is that Dave's age profile roughly lines up with the transfer policy this offseason for DC United. So there's a reason why they sent you that.
In your prime, former Champions League players, yeah.
Boom.
David, how do you feel about the city of Washington, D.C.? Because I know you're down on Los Angeles.
No, I love D.C. D.C.'s a good city.
Yeah.
I've come further on it. Initially, I was like, eh. But I'm a D.C. fan. I like Philly. I think Philly's a good city.
Mm-hmm.
I like Atlanta. I just don't like Boston. Pretty much Boston and LA, and and large swaths of other states. I'm good on, but yeah, I
that
like
shall
DC.
Go
on. DC, it doesn't great work, it food, doesn't... great food. They have public transportation, which I love. Walkable if you want it. They've got electric scooters. I love that about cities. A little bit of history.
I mean, that's all Boston too. Boston has all that too.
Yeah, it just has people from Boston in it all the time, and thinks it's a big city. You know, Doyle scurrying around with somewhere to go because they're quote unquote busy.
Doyle throwing up a couple of smoke screens here. And wearing the smoke screens kit from
what
LA.
What a segue from Weavey. Yeah, the smoke screen kit from LAFC. It's a little bit like camouflage. It's got some like different.
What would you say you're camouflaging yourself from in that kit? Like what would you stand in front of?
I don't know. I think I would just be standing and jumping in the 3-2-5-2 when they pop smoke
that's a good answer.
They score goals, right?
I was wondering where you're gonna go. Yeah,
that's what all this is supposed to be. Like I read the little blurb that they send. All these teams are sending blurbs to explain the background of the kits, and this one is like specifically a celebration of their supporters' culture that they have cultivated since they came into the league 5 years ago. It's cool. You know, it's a big departure from the black and gold, which I think is iconic, right? So it's always a risk to do something different. But I think what we all enjoy about this new slate of kits, the ones that we've seen that have been released anyway, is that, like, look, they're like these teams are branching out. These teams are trying something new. Whereas the last few years, everything was like black or white.
Yeah.
And it was sometimes difficult to tell teams apart on the stream. And like, you're not going to have that problem in 2023. Cause like everything is a little outside the norm of what we're used to. And I like when teams kind of stretch their wings a little bit.
Yeah. I got to give a big credit to Adidas for this crop of kits. They went out on a limb a little bit. I did not see this Rapids kit coming, Tom, and that's what you're rocking. Thank you to Colorado. I've got one in a box in the other room. I'm absolutely jacked about it. It's got an incredible story behind it, too. You got one, too?
Yeah, shout out to Omar. Legend.
Yeah, shout out to Omar. I got one, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Omar and the Rapids.
So if we're all, folks. I thought I was?
Yeah, if we're all really high on Colorado this season for some reason, you know it's because of Omar.
In the playoffs for sure, undoubtedly. Tell me about the jersey, Tom. Why do you like it?
Yeah, look, I'll go with the serious point first and the more important point, that this was kind of made in conjunction to, you know, a rise above the stigma for raise awareness for mental health. And they came with a lot of stats on how poorly, you know, the state has done in being able to reach people that are affected by mental health and mental illness and all those resources. So part of this kid is going to come with, you know, more awareness, more resources and everything. And that's incredible. First and foremost, the most important point of this, it's a really cool thing. It's a really cool initiative. On like the cosmetic side, it's just a dope kid. This is like beautiful. Like I texted Omar like when I came, like dreary eyed coming in the door from traveling back from London. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like I think that this is wonderful. It's definitely one of the favorite ones I've seen. I've been catching up on a lot of them. It was made with kind of in conjunction with a local artist as well. I don't know. I can't say enough good things about this shirt.
Yeah, I really like it as well. The thing I see on all of these kits, to go back to Adidas and not to overplay this, but I like what they've done to simplify, and I'm holding the wrong spot. I'm holding the crest. To go three stripes. Like I think it's just a much cleaner look overall. I think the sleeves have cleaner looks. I just think this crop of jerseys is really good, and there are more coming. I hear great things about the Galaxy one. Surprise, surprise. Here we go.
I've seen the Galaxy one. Galaxy one is dope.
Oh, it's sick. And
the RSL one, the RSL sick brought points. Back the gold. Like they haven't had a full-on they used to call them the Victory Golds. It's been, I think, more than a decade since they had that one. So the RSL one looked really, really good too. But it just goes back to the point that I think we all kind of agreed with, is like there's a lot of like variety in these kits this year, and it's going to make it just visually, it's going to make it more fun to watch the league.
I want to give a shout out to FC Dallas going with the burn style, but I think they did it in a cool way. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to shout out the Union. I've had some people describe it to me as like the Simpsons opening scene.
I like that.
But I like that. Yeah, I think it's cool. And they're like, hey, the kids won't like that. I'm like, the kids won't know what we're talking about when we say the Simpsons opening scene.
Also, anything with that baby blue is money.
And the crest, again, to go to the detail side, they went with just the snake as opposed to the full circle crest, which I think is a really cool nod to sort of these secondary crests that are really cool in their own right. Same thing with the LAFC one. It's really cool. We mentioned the Galaxy. Fabrizio Romano is reporting, and maybe Tom, you can clarify for us, that Julian Araujo to Barcelona, here we go, that he'll travel to Barcelona, and the deal is finally done after a crazy deadline. Wait, deal is finally done? What? Signing a contract till 26, it's a 4 million euro package. It's done? How is it done? I thought FIFA was saying it couldn't be done.
So he's in Barcelona right now, finalizing the deal, doing everything. Like it is done, and he is there. So the points of confusion on this is it was registration versus the deal being done. So they missed registration for him to be able to play in La Liga, to play for the Barcelona first team, and I believe this. I'm still kind of working out all of these details. But usually when that happens, teams might back out of the deal, or teams might change the terms of the deal, or whatever happens, because of course they wanted to add him to this current roster as cover at right back, not an integral role, but you know, he was signed for a reason. Barcelona didn't back out, and it was described to me that was never, you know, they always just wanted him, always wanted to be, and that going forward with the deal was never a question, or even trying to wait and change terms for the summer. So I think that's pretty cool. It just remains to be seen, I guess, what happened. I'm trying to not be definitive, because at every turn, things continue to change around this. But as my understanding, he cannot be registered in Spain. So he's at the worst just going to train with the first team and kind of get acclimated to Barcelona, and then kind of go from the jump in the summer. Maybe there's, I guess, it's theoretically possible he could be loaned somewhere else. I think the Swiss league is still open. As of a couple hours ago, it was described to me as not all that likely, but again, FIFA came out and said that this wasn't happening a few weeks ago, and then it happened. So I'm kind of being cautious to hedge and everything. My assumption is he's just going to be at Barcelona training with the first team and getting acclimated to the city and his new surroundings. But again, theoretically, I guess that could change.
You know whose window is open? Major League Soccer. Someone be looking for a right back that he could help.
Maybe the Galaxy. Even the Galaxy could be open to.
Yeah, maybe. Like, but what if LAFC pushes Hollingshead into central midfield and brings Julian Araujo on loan? San Jose could be looking for one. That'd be a comfortable spot for him to land in.
Max chaos here. I appreciate it. By the way, we're going to do top five right backs in this show, as well as top five defensive mids. And we have
imagine
our final
the press release. If San Jose announced that they were bringing Barcelona right back, Julian Araujo, in on loan through the summer. That would just be mind-blowing.
It would be beautiful is what it would be. Austin FC, we'll team preview them. We've got LAFC, so we'll hit them as well. Let's see. Charlotte FC, some news there before we jump in. Inter Miami, who had a tough preseason result last night. Toronto FC, and I think that's it. Then right backs and D-mids. NYCFC as well. Sorry, NYCFC fans. I know you're going to say I intentionally forgot you, but that's certainly not the case. Some big news here, Tom. You just confirmed it on Twitter, but it was originally reported by Ryan Clark of the Oregonian. Bill Tuiloma traded to Charlotte FC for $800,000 in GAM. 27 years old. I think he's made about 100 appearances or so for Portland, but a little bit of a goal merchant as well off the back line. But they were looking for depth back there. They've had some injury issues at center back this preseason. And they got it, but not for a small price tag.
Yeah, Charlotte FC acquired Bill Tuiloma in a trade with Portland. It's $800,000 up front and another $100,000 in add-ons. That's a big fee. I'm going to kind of stop right there. I was hearing a little bit late last night, early this morning, that this was kind of a possibility. And as I was looking into it, my assumption would have been that it was maybe, you know, $500,000. You know, you think about the Dave Romney trade. So first of all, that's a big haul for Portland to be open to trading Bill Tuiloma. It's a very good player. He's somebody who, like you said, Weeby, had more than 100 appearances for Portland. 27 years old, turns 28 in March. So in his prime, a big signing for Charlotte to plug into that central defense as Guzman Carujo is out. Him and Adelson Milanda are going to be kind of the first choice pairing at center back. And then when Carujo comes back, who had been, I thought, pretty good to very good before he got injured last season, that'll kind of make their depth there pretty solid. But again, it came at a bit of a steep price, and kind of, I know that we're going to dive into it, Charlotte, later. So I'll just one point on the Portland side. Portland, they believe that Zach McGraw is ready to be kind of a full-time starter in this league, or at least has certainly earned the chance. They do know that this is a short-term risk, that they're just straight up light at the position, that McGraw being kind of the third choice or insurance for Mabiala was important. And right now they don't have that. So they might add, you know, a short-term type of option or somebody for depth just to add to numbers, but they do plan to make a significant addition at that spot, whether it's before the window closes in April or if it's early in the summer. But again, Portland plan on signing, you know, a TAM level striker and what I believe to be probably a TAM level center back or something significant.
Interesting. We'll dig into this more with the Timbers as we get to opening day and see Tuiloma with Charlotte and what Portland decides. But Zach McGraw, for me, in the expansion draft, I was surprised that he was not either chosen and flipped or more of a target for St. Louis. They went with John Bell instead, but he was a guy, when I saw the list, I was circling it.
Yeah, I would say if that's a pretty good example. If you put him and John Bell next to each other, I think they have very different talents. I've never seen McGraw play in a back four. I don't know that he can cover that much ground. For Portland, I think he's probably fine in a back three, which is what they've mainly used him in. So it probably takes away their flexibility to flex into a back four, because you're relying on Mabiala and Zuparic in that scenario, where Tuiloma, that's his best skill set, is his athleticism, right? His low center of gravity.
Free kick taking.
Huh?
And free kick taking.
And his free kick taking, of course, yeah. So I think they lose an element there, and I think that's what you see with McGraw in terms of St. Louis. I don't think he fits that system where John Bell should be maximized in that formation or in that style because of what he does well. But in saying all that, I think Zach McGraw is probably a replacement level third center back in Major League Soccer right now. And so if you can get a ton of assets for Tuiloma, it makes sense. I've said Mabiala is done for 3 years. He sometimes is and sometimes isn't. So it makes sense that Tom would say they're probably going to spend money in that position. And that's probably their biggest hole. Even the center forward conversation, I don't really care. I think Evander should fix a lot of that. It takes pressure off Moreno and Jimmy Chara for them to be more of finishers when they need to be. There's five dudes at that center forward position. To me, it's been center back for a while, because I think that's limited the way they can release the fullbacks, the way they can press higher over the last 3 or 4 years.
If you're looking for Zach McGraw, true discussion, the only place you can get it is Extra Time. So welcome to the best MLS show in the universe. Crown Legacy FC, that's the first time Crown Legacy FC has been mentioned on this podcast. That's the MLS Next Pro team of Charlotte FC. They've made a signing of a guy that we saw against the U.S. national team recently, who really stood out, midfielder Nikola Pekovic from the Serbian top flight club. Not going to try. Just go read it. There are multiple umlaut triangles over letters, and I'm I'm going to leave that for native speakers. Tom, why Crown Legacy FC and not Charlotte FC, given it's pretty clear that they believe this guy has MLS level talent?
Yeah, look, the deal was around $3 million. Like, this is a pretty significant, like, Cincinnati paid $3 million to sign Marco Angulo, who, like, I've been raving about all offseason. Like, this is, it's like a first team level expenditure or even more. So this would be Philadelphia Union's club record signing, $3 million. Like, just to kind of put it into perspective for, you know, the investment that they're putting into the second team. Yeah, I'm not sure what the roster, you know, cap gymnastics are. Maybe they had to prioritize this Tui Loma signing to kind of figure out how to place players where. Look, they planned for this to be a first team player. You don't spend $3 million to sign, you know, he made his first cap for Serbia against the United States, but, you know, Serbian Youth International, you don't spend this money without the plan that we're going to develop him and bring him into the first team. I'm just not sure when that'll be, whether that might be the summer, whether it'll have to be next year. But yeah, this is a really interesting signing. And I think one way that teams that are using their MLS Next Pro teams for the first team, I think we're going to see more and more of this. You know, not every team is going to have multiple, you know, $3 million signings, but I don't think that this is going to be abnormal.
I believe there's no limit on, and it doesn't apply to any sort of salary cap on transfer fees in MLS Next Pro.
Correct. But once they get transferred up to the first team, then it might.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to get a little bit of clarity and figure out what the rules are. I suspect that he is a Next Pro signing because he would be classed as a U22 initiative if he was signed directly to an MLS contract. However, Charlotte, with the way they've used their DPs, have access only to one U22 initiative slot, and that one's already filled. So you sign him
Vinicius Mello is also a U22 initiative. Kerwin Vargas.
So I have heard that only one of those is U22, and I don't know which one. But I have heard that only one of those.
This is good. This is good stuff.
Is U22 initiative?
The question on Vinicius Mello is: if you're a U22 signing in the woods and no one's around you, are you really a U22 signing?
Oh my God,
people kept when they transferred Daniel Rios to Chivas. I had like multiple people being like, "Hey, don't forget that he's really good and he's a real person. He's not my girlfriend that goes to another school. You've just never met her. Like, they're like, this is a real player. It's a real Brazilian talented center forward." And I was like, "Oh yeah, like because he was injured last year."
Anyway, the point is that they didn't have the room on the roster to make this kid a first team signing right now. I think they need to either graduate someone up or trade someone or work out some sort of cap gymnastics to take Joswiak down off of his salary into the type of DP who is sub max TAM. In order to open up all three U22 initiative slots. This is where, I mean, we can all agree. We all wish that MLS rules were a little more transparent and we all had a little bit better access to what team budgets look like, because it puts us in a situation where we kind of have to guess at most of this stuff. And it's also like, this is an exciting signing, man. This kid's really good. And it's not just like the eye test from one game. I talked to front offices across the league after that game. I said, guys, is this kid as good as he looks? Like, what do the numbers say? And to a man, every single one was like, yeah, his underlying numbers are really, really good in that league, which is a really well-renowned, well-regarded selling league. It's where the Revs goalkeeper came from, Georgi Petrovic, where he came from that same team, man. So it's like, it translates. And to that end, like, sources at the league and around the league confirmed that, like, as soon as that game happened and as soon as people checked the underlying numbers, there was like a mad scramble to get this kid on the discovery list. And it's just because Zoran Krnata is from Serbia, he already knew about this kid. Charlotte already had him on their discovery list, so they were able to beat everyone to the punch. Now, whether the discovery list is translatable to MLS Next Pro, I do not know. Because could someone else have signed him to an MLS Next Pro contract before Charlotte did? I can't say.
Let's send Tom out into the woods to ask these questions.
Let's also not overlook one of the biggest stories of this, which is teaming him in central midfield with Philip Mayaka at Crown Legacy FC.
Oh,
that is one of the biggest parts of this whole thing.
I got to tell you guys, when I'm at a Premier League game on vacation in London,
This is what I miss. Just getting into the who's a U-22 initiative signing.
Wait a minute. Leeds fans weren't asking you about this. They're like, look, what is the U-22 situation for the Columbus Crew? Exactly. Are they going to start promoting? You know,
Taha Brewer's been
really good for the U.S.
Well, you'd assume they want to sign Aiden Morris as soon as possible to Leeds United so that they can. We're all hearing that
Alexandre Matan is going to, like, this is his breakout year. The fact that he's playing for, yeah.
Chelsea needs an MLS Next Pro team to stash some of these signings.
It's not just Leeds United fans who are talking about. Like, this is the talk of Yorkshire, like all of Northern England. Tom was in there.
It goes U22 and then pudding. That's the level of discussion there. All right, let's get into our team previews. I'm sorry, that was awful. Austin FC starts us off. Here is their haiku for 2022. Change the narrative. Retire the laminator. Cups are the bonus. Last year was all about how good vibes weren't enough and that culture comes with wins. Well, they got the wins, 16 wins in the regular season, 56 points, good for second in the West. They lost in the conference finals to LAFC, but it was a really nice run. And if their DP signing in the summer, Emiliano Rigoni, could have finished some of those chances, they might have got to MLS Cup. As it was a wonderful season for them. Then in the offseason, they lose their best center back. Gabrielsen goes home for family reasons. They stay in Scandinavia. Gabrielsen back to Norway. They go over to Finland. Leo Viisanen is a signing. 25-year-old Finland international, was at Elfsborg for 3 years. Great resume. We'll see if that scouting translates to MLS. They need it to. Get potentially a starting left back. Adam Lundqvist, in-state from the Houston Dynamo. Amro Tarek is in. Saw him play a little bit last night. Sofyan Jafal. Basically, DC United, I don't know, they didn't have the international roster spot for him. And Austin was like, hey, we really like this dude. He was a super draft pick last year. They snatch him up, bring him in. And then I guess you could count Rigoni sort of as a new player. And then Giassi's artist and free agency. So it was a pretty busy offseason for Austin. Thomas Pochettino was out. Moussa Djite was loaned back to France. And here we are. I watched their preseason game last night against Sacramento Republic. And Josh Wolf played a not first team for 74 minutes. In those 74 minutes, Sacramento Republic was up 1-0. Austin's trying to control the game with the ball, which is what they're going to do this year. They're playing pretty riskily out of the back. Johan Valencia had a terrible pass that got intercepted, a bad foul. That's where the goal came from. He subbed everybody in at 74, and Austin went wild. The goal came from Diego Fagundes to Rigoni. Guys, Rigoni scored a goal. I'm just going to say it again. Rigoni scored. Back post run from Diego Fagundes. It's everything they've been hoping for. They just needed to happen in the regular season. So what's this season about? I mean, I think it's about cups.
What was your family doing while everybody else is doing moving stuff and you're watching an MLS preseason game?
I cannot tell you technically where I was or what I was doing, but I was watching this game intently, and it was a joy. Sort of. It was MLS preseason soccer. But 74th minute on, it was an absolute joy to see those starters throw it down people's throats. So I think this year is about cups to me. Like, they took that big step. They made these changes to raise, I think, both their floor and their ceiling. They're super deep at center forward now. They signed Will Bruin as a free agent. So they have three guys who can do different things. Aruti, Zardes, Will Bruin. I do have some questions about the depth at center back. Viisanen's got to be the dude. But yeah, the bonus game bit is over. Like, there aren't bonus games for them anymore. They're the hunted. Tim Thompson hit us up and said, should we play a drinking game when overperforming XG and regression is mentioned for Austin FC? I wouldn't if you want to be sober. I'll just put it that way. Pele is King said, I challenge y'all not to mention XG when talking about Austin. If you manage that feat, I'll donate $50 to Amnesty International. Pele, you should just do that. Just out of the goodness of your heart. Because I can't make that promise to you. And then we have a lot of Glaminator questions. But I think for me, this team has a huge ceiling. I just have questions about what they do when it's not just MLS regular season they can focus on. Now it's CCL. Now it's Leagues Cup. Do they have the depth, specifically in central midfield and center back, to compete at a high level in multiple competitions, Doyle?
I don't know. I don't love the looks of their center back depth chart. You know, Cascante, I think, was kind of barely hanging on by his fingernails to starting caliber type of situation last year. And that was playing next to Gabrielsen, who I think we all agreed was really, really good. And with him gone, Viisanen being a question mark, that's tough. That's a very tough situation, very tough question mark to have in the middle of the back line for a team that is going to get tested right out the gates, man. Like they're in CCL. They have to juggle competitions in a way that we've seen ruin teams, and they behind those two guys, Emre Tarek, we've seen him in MLS before. Like, he's not really a starting caliber guy. Kip Keller, we all liked him coming into the season. He only played about 400 minutes, and he had some good moments, but he didn't. Athletically, he looked like he was struggling at times, and same thing for Romana as well. Like, that is the big question.
Well, I think Romagna's been hurt.
He's been healthy. He has not been great, David.
Well, for sure, but he's played two games at a time inside of months out. I get what you guys are saying. One, I don't understand the central midfield question. They have Sofia and Jafal, which is a great pickup. Mm-hmm. Owen Wolf's played a ton of minutes, so that's not a question mark. At center back, I agree with you, Doyle, but look at MLS teams, right? We just talked about Portland and Charlotte that don't have center back depth. That's not really a position of depth. So yeah, it's a risk bringing in an international like Vicen and needing him to hit year one. But I would argue they have less risks in their roster than the average team right now in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, but they're not supposed to be an average team.
Yeah,
that's the point, David. Like, we're talking about them. Can they compete for trophies across multiple competitions? I don't think they can. I expect them to regress, year over year in terms of their regular season performance. I still think they'll be a good team. I like their midfield balance. I believe that Diego Fagundes is going to have a second consecutive really, really good year. I think that Driussi won't put up MVP numbers again, but I think he'll be really good. I think Jossi's got a lot of this makes sense, but there's a difference between being a team that looks pretty good on paper and should be pretty good on paper and competing for trophies across multiple competitions. I think that's probably out of reach for this group unless Vicenin turns out to be the Finnish Heimosen Olave.
Finnish Heimosen Olave. What a great phrase that is. Who's their third best midfielder?
It's Ring. Alex Ring is their third best midfielder.
Okay, no, sorry. Who's their third best in the 8 and 6 rotation?
Oh, okay. Jafal was up there. I didn't like Valencia at all.
Valencia hasn't done it yet.
Yeah,
but the guy was brought in to be a star, and now they're just asking him to be the third best player at that. Weeby, pick a team you like. The third best player at that position,
I don't like Valencia. I think Owen Wolf might be their. I think he's probably their third best midfielder.
I think Jafal's really good. I think that I'm
okay, but my point is,
so the position is already deeper than it was last year, right? Jafal's better than Felipe. The position's already deeper than it was last year. I don't think that can be a question mark. Plus, you add in having more quality probably around them.
Austin fans really got to David. He's like out on a limb.
He started the whole thing by the bit's done, and then proceeded to have an insane level of questioning on this one club.
It's not that much questioning. They're going to add a ton of games and a ton of pressure. And if Ring or Pereira gets hurt, I don't think the three behind them have anywhere near the same ceiling.
Laminate that.
Yeah. Bam. All right.
For sure.
BetMGM says that Western Conference fourth.
Show me a Ricky Puig injury and Puig. Then tell me how. Puig. Yeah. And
hey, extra time. My name is Ricky Puig, not Puig.
Amazing. Thank you. That might be the moment of the season.
Oh my God. Anders is in mid-season form. What an incredible drop. So fourth says BetMGM. I'm looking at 538 right now. What do you think about fourth in the West for Austin? Yay, nay, nobody's
so
got a
thought. That's where I have them. And to Doyle's point, I think there'll be a regression across the season because they hit so well last year. But I actually have more confidence in them for a Leagues Cup, CCL, or MLS Cup run based on what I saw in the MLS Cup playoffs last year and the experience they've already acquired, plus bringing in a guy like Giassi's Artis or even a Will Bruin in big moments like that. So while I think their standings will take a step back, I think they have a better chance. I will be more confident in them being an MLS Cup contender this year if they play similar soccer than what I was last year.
Just rapid fire, Doyle. Who will be their leading goal scorer?
Juicy.
Who will be their second leading goal scorer?
Jossi.
How many over-under goals plus assists for Ragone? What would you set it at?
I'll set it at 11.5.
For a DP? DP winger in his prime that they spent $4 million on?
Yeah, man. He's not that good. So I'll set it at 11.5. What are you going to take, Tom?
I'm saying that
DP winger in his prime. You think he's going to score 25 goals?
I'm saying that's the problem. If that's the expectations for this player, like we've all kind of talked about.
Yeah. Like, that is a problem. That is one of the reasons why I think they're probably third or fourth in the West instead of one or two in the West.
All right, let's talk about number one in the West. LAFC, here is the haiku. I believe I said 2022 for the last one. We all know it's for 2023. Here's the 2023 haiku. Doubles make legends, but even legends get sold. Who will be the nine? So you go win the double. Oh, everything's hunky-dory. Chicho Arango's kissing his wife in the stands. Well, now he's in Mexico in Liga MX. Big fee? Never seemed like he truly fit in with what Steve Cherundolo wanted. There was always this underlying, like, hey, we kind of want to trade him, or like, who wants to buy him, while he's just banging goal after goal after goal. So he's out. They don't have a star nine.
This guy is going to annihilate MLS and CCL. Like, guaranteed.
Yeah. Oh, and Leagues Cup? Yeah.
CCL and Leagues Cup.
Well, they have a bye through the first round of Leagues Cup, so.
Yeah, he gets the rest up.
He's just going to, like every time he plays in MLS. Remember when Herc Gomez, 10, 12 years ago, every time he got on the field for Santos against an MLS team in CCL, he just destroyed whoever he was. Like, that's what's going to happen with Chicho Arango.
Mm. Right now, it looks like Kwadwo Opoku is the nine in preseason. So you have some interchange there. You've got, obviously, Dennis Bouanga, who's, by all indications, had a very good preseason. Carlos Vela and then Opoku, some nice interchange there. And then some pieces they got in the offseason. Stipe Buic is a young player they spent $5 million on. Young Croatian, so that's a guy who will be mixed into that rotation. Sergi Palencia is in as depth on the back line. Aaron Long, huge free agent signing on the back line for them. Dino Maldonado is an Honduran international, also center back depth. But departures are pretty long for a double winning team. Gareth Bale, Daniil. Arango, huh?
Daniil? I don't know what name just happened. Daniil Maldonado.
What did I say? I thought I said Daniil.
I have no idea what you said.
Yeah, you know, I love a list, but sometimes they trip me up. Sebastian Ibiaga out.
David has nothing but contempt for people from New Jersey. That's what that is.
It's true.
That's and the
also,
Long Island,
also
New
a
Jersey
ton of
rivalry.
Contempt for anybody who doesn't give Catrachos their due. I know that about Dave. So
yeah, obviously.
Eddie Segura,
that's
big
why
question
I'm
marks
invited
there.
Invited to the Honduras home game.
Exactly.
You are not.
Exactly. I think I could be. I think I just got to ask the right people.
New York specifically looked at you and said, he cannot come, but you can come.
Wow, he didn't say that to my face. Come on, New Latif Blessing out, gone to New England, and obviously Gareth Bale gone to play golf and pro-ams, and Kristen Teo is out as well. Doyle, here's the question. How many trophies, how many competitions do they try to compete in? Is there any drop-off? Alex Fala hit us up and said, which tournament should LAFC prioritize?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think they should prioritize CCL, but it's hard to say that they're doing that given that they just sold Chicho and there's not a number nine in as of yet. They're still thin in midfield. The Tillman signing helps a good deal. The fact that they haven't sold Cifuentes helps because that's like having another DP on there. The fact that they've kept him in Chiqui Palacios instead of selling them this offseason suggests like, yeah, we're going all in for CCL. But it's, again, that does not counterbalance the number nine situation. So it's weird. But like that is the next step for this club, is doing something internationally after what they did last year. And, you know, the success that they had back in 2019, being a Supporters Shield winner. So that's what makes the most sense to me. I like the idea of Kwadwo Opoku as a number nine. He's not a traditional target man in any sense, but his runs are really smart. He's a relentless off the ball in terms of attacking space, but also in terms of making it really difficult for opposing center backs to build out. And I think you need that next to Carlos Vela. If there is a Achilles heel with this team, I think long term, or something that limits their upside, it's the fact that like Vela's not the same guy anymore. Like whether it's Opoku or not, like they're gonna figure out the number nine situation. At some point, they will add more depth to central midfield, and I'm pretty sure that that'll be really good for them. But Vela as a DP, like, he didn't hit that level the second half of last season. And I'm not really expecting him to be that level as a 90-minute player for this season. If you could use him in the old El Senior role, like, just come off the bench for 35 minutes a week, Carlos. That's all we need from you. Like, that would be great. And maybe with Bjelk in town, the Croatian kid, maybe that's what it'll happen. But, like, just as a limiting factor in their ability to hit the heights that we've seen from them in the past and to compete across multiple competitions, like, that is a red flag to me.
What, one quick tangent, what is this show's infatuation with making everybody be a super sub? This is like a common theme. Like, I don't know why we're limiting him. I understand the concern that he's not 2019 well, Carlos
Tom,
Vela, but like,
for me, it's that I watched him play soccer last year.
Yeah, but
I've got an idea, Tom. I've got an idea. What if instead of on every show, we just bring you on for 30 minutes? What do you think about that? Maybe we get the best out of you?
It's like, yeah, let's take this DP, this MVP. why can't he just be a super sub? What do you mean, why can't he just be a super sub? Like, it goes back, like, I mean, there's lots on Ibrahimovic. Before I was on the show, when I was just starting at MajorLeagueSoccer.com, there was like a legitimate argument that, oh, maybe Zlatan should be a super sub because he doesn't defend enough. And he scored like 30 goals. Like, I don't understand why we're placing limits on these players. It's like, what's the point?
The legacy of Bobby Warshaw is strong. Quick question before we get off them. Denise Bouanga from Zach Brown.
Love that maybe didn't answer Tom's point.
We just moved it right along. He says he's going to be a golden boot contender in 2023, Dave. He's a problem. What do you think about Bouanga this year?
I don't know that golden boot is the term I would use. I would say MVP. I think he is an early favorite for MVP. If he plays at the level he played last year, and at his age, the expectation is game in and game out, probably not as a super sub, probably as a starter for this team.
Maybe.
He's the confidence right now. The midfield starters, fair, but you've got question marks at center back. That doesn't mean Aaron Long's not good. He just hasn't been there, and you've lost pieces that were big last year. You have question marks. You have all these question marks. Bouanga's the known. And I think the belief is with the way they spent on him, the way they signed him, and then the way he performed when he came in, that he's going to be even better this year. So I have him as an early MVP candidate, and I think that question – so I wouldn't use the term golden boot, but I get the idea, and I think it's right.
All right, here's 538 has 17% to win MLS Cup. I believe that's the top – percentage chance there, 91% to make the playoffs. BetMGM said first in the Western Conference. Does that roughly jive with where everybody has them? I mean, let's say top three just to be safe, or anybody saying there's going to be a big regression? Drink, Austin.
I've got them top three.
I don't believe the team we're looking at right now is an MLS Cup contender, but there's a ton of belief that the team at the end of the year will be. This is probably the one club in MLS that has used assets in the right way, where they have money to spend, legitimate money, and they can continue to make moves. They've shown that they operate in the world market at a level maybe Atlanta does, but Atlanta does it out of their own pocket, less money that they're flipping over from other moves. Like LAFC, that's why the Aubameyang stuff, yeah, it makes no sense, but it's not unrealistic. And they're consistently in conversations like that, that other MLS teams can't be in. So my belief is that at the end of the year, they will be an MLS Cup contender.
I think that's a good way to end it. All right, Charlotte FC. By the way, NBC, that Charlotte FC, like, purple and pink kit? Avant-garde. I got that one in the hopper for you later on. Here's their haiku. Hope came from within. There's power in believing that you aren't screwed. Charlotte, last year this time, we were talking about a manager saying they were in a bad place, let's say. And they started out rough. But Christian Latanzio comes in, replaces said manager, and they go on a run. 42 points, 13 wins, 18 losses, just 3 draws. 9th in the East. They barely missed the playoffs, but they're in the running. Key offseason arrivals in the Super Draft, Hamadi Diop. Ashley Westwood comes over from England. Enzo Copetti is their record signing from Argentina, from Racing. And now Bill Tuliloma comes in to reinforce the back line. Some key offseason departures. Christian Fuchs goes into the front office. Jordi Alcevar is gone. Alan Franco's gone. Dana Rios to Chivas. We talked about that one. Anton Walks, the tragedy that is and was. Still thinking about him, thinking about those close to him. That is going to be something that is with this team this year and probably forever forward. So here's the question. Playoffs, Tom? Is that the deal? This team should be expected to be there? Is that what they should expect?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, you look at the second half of last season, or I guess even after Latanzio took over, they played at about a playoff pace going down the stretch. And I think that this team has improved. I don't know if significantly is correct, but I really think that they've gotten a lot better, particularly with this Bill Tuiloma addition. Again, I was saying at the top of the show, it was a steep price. It was, but when your starting center backs will be Milanda and Bill Tuiloma from the start of the season, and then you figure out where Carujo fits in when he's back. Number one overall super bad draft pick, Hamidi Diop. I don't know if he's going to play more left back or more left center back, regardless, but this is a lot deeper than they were, you know, yesterday, but before they got added to Loma. And again, I'm all in on the Enzo Capetti signing. I think that I've talked to enough people about his style and just about the way that he'll kind of create more space for Swiderski, the way that he'll create more space for the wingers. If Kamil Usyak or Kerwin Vargas are plus, like above average, like if they have one of them kind of pop on the wing, I think that this attack is going to be really, really good. There are questions. We'll see how kind of where Westwood is in terms of his age. You know, there's a couple questions on the back line. But again, I think that this team is going to be fun. I think that this team should be aiming for the playoffs. And again, if you push me for an answer right now, I'd say yes.
David, this is your wheelhouse. Steven Elliott said, which Charlotte player is going to have the biggest progression in year two? You might call that the David Goss theorem.
Yeah, and I would say, and obviously thrown into a bit of a question mark as well, but Adelson Milanda. I thought for a young center back coming into this league, I've rarely seen a player look as comfortable that quickly. And the potential is off the charts to cover ground over the top, to be able to help press forward, to pass guys off. Like, he looked completely there. Now, and I'll be first to say, I don't know how to discuss Anton Walks in a soccer sense. And I don't think there is a way, but that's, you know, a leader in the team. That's the guy he stood next to. And it's heartbreaking tragedy. So I don't mean to be crass about it. I genuinely do not know how to bring it up, but it is a major factor. But in a vacuum, I would say on talent and potential, it would be Milanda. I'm pretty high on Kerwin Vargas as well. I know Lloyd Sam would jump out of the booth just to watch him play a few times more, but they needed some more 1v1 quality. And I think he showed that he had it once he can settle in. He's sort of more the case study for a Goss theorem guy, where it's like creative, but how does it actually affect the team? And then it takes a little while to get comfortable. But those would be the two big names. Don't forget Brian Romero. He's playing with the U.S. youth national teams. He's awesome. I don't know if he'll get minutes, but he's so good.
Doyle, throw some cold water on Charlotte fans. What's like the but for this team?
I'm gonna echo what David said about Anton Walks. It's really difficult to talk about central defense on this team, even in the wake of the Tuiloma signing. We're talking about a new center back partnership. We're talking about you know, a lack of continuity in a spot that became a strength for them last year. And that was important because Christian Colina really underperformed in goal. He struggled badly, especially the second half of the season. I mean, we all remember the Zell Arayan free kick goal.
But he got a nickname, so he had a good season.
And then in front, like, Derek Jones was, I thought, really, really good the second half of last season in front of them. But that is a question of chemistry as well. So you're trying to build something new there. If it doesn't happen for them, it's probably central defense or the three line. And it's kind of a 4-2-3-1 that they play. Like, I think Swiderski's good. But the other three guys on that line, including Capetti, they're all really big question marks.
Yeah, this Capetti to me, and I know, Tom, I agree with you. It's just the only big loss on the field in the roster was Daniel Rios, who was big for them at moments when other players weren't keeping the level and kept them in that playoff race, if you remember, when they sort of entered it late on. With his loss, and I think Shinyashiki can bring some of that, at least goal scoring, not positionally exactly. But if Capetti doesn't hit, then this is a team that's going to struggle to be in the playoff race. He doesn't need to be Cucho. He just needs to be Sebas Ferreira or Erkin Kara from last year at a minimum.
I think that he can do again. And Rios scored 7 goals, 4 of which was in one game. He was good down the stretch, but he was so good because partly they needed a profile like that. Now you're replacing him with a $6 million signing from Argentina who scored 25 goals with
Rocky. Respect the buzzer, Tom. Respect the buzzer, all right?
It doesn't matter if I do respect it, but even Tom's if I didn't, it would Tom's it jumps
Tom's
in.
A 90-minute player, just like Carlos Vela, who, of course, played 90 minutes exactly one time in the last 4 months of last season.
Well, let's go.
Why are we talking about him as a superstar?
Doyle's been in the game logs. He's like, wait a second. I'm going to save this for later in the show.
Steaming.
By the way, Charlotte to me is a big, we talked about it there briefly, Dave, and that's why I pointed it toward you. I think it's a big Goss Theorem team, especially on the wings. Like Nuno Santos saw some moments. They need a second year bump from him. Joswiak for sure need a bump from him. He's in like the Ragoni camp after last year. Vargas, same thing. There's a bunch of guys where it's like, hey, in year two, we need you to hit, especially on the wings for this team. Okay, on to Inter Miami we go. 2-1 loss last night to Montreal in preseason, but hey, it doesn't matter. It's preseason. Here's your haiku. Behold the father. What about the holy goat? All eyes on summer. I mean, it feels like they're setting up for one thing, Dave, and we kind of all know what that one thing is. Mike Ryan Ruiz tweeting yet again. He seems to be very well connected in Miami. He is a Miami guy after all. That there are still conversations ongoing between Lionel Messi and Inter Miami's ownership group, and that Inter Miami feel confident that they have a very good opportunity to sign Lionel Messi in the summer. And when I look at this offseason, it feels an awful lot like they're setting up for a big summer. You can buy down Leo Campana off of his young DP status if you need to. You could move Rodolfo Pizarro again or buy him out or do whatever you need to do to open up a DP spot there. You got Joseph Martinez on TAM. Most of your signings are like depth signings to improve the squad. New right back in Negri. New center back from Ukraine. Shout out Shakhtar Donetsk, the legends. Nicholas Stefanelli, he's more of a like, hey, I can play a lot of positions. I could start. Maybe you don't want me to sort of player. But then you lose a center back in Damian Lowe that you leaned on last year. You lose Alejandro Pozuelo. You lose Gonzalo Higuain. It feels to me like this is a squad that's like, hey, we're at like 66% of what we want to be because in the summer, that's when we take our big swings.
I agree with you. Now, I would say where we're sitting right now, and this goes to me working on my preseason predictions, why would you trust any of that, right? The pure belief that they have to sign the greatest player of all time from the biggest club in the world to come and make an earth-shattering transfer.
Whoa, that's a lot of PSG respect right there.
Yeah. For...
Whoa.
We're just talking about money. I'm not talking about quality. I'm not talking about history. I'm just talking about money.
Okay.
And the fact that he plays alongside Neymar and Mbappe, who are pretty big names.
Maybe not Neymar for long.
Okay, that's fine,
too.
You here in Colorado Rapids are in the convos?
That could be. They got a DP spot open.
They do have a DP spot open. So Neymar, call me. I'll give you the full rundown. The kits are great.
Daily Mail headline.
But
Neymar to MLS.
Yeah, but right. But to be sure of any of that is tough. And so when you look at this team, they lost the heart and soul of their attack in Pozuelo. They potentially lost the leader of the team, what it seemed like by the end, in Higuain, both as a person and as a goal scorer. And they haven't replaced any of it. So I think Leo Campana coming back, your hope would be if he's healthy, he covers a decent amount of that. And then you're looking at this team and you're saying they probably believe man for man, they improve the back line, right? To bring in a pretty much a full Ukrainian international from Shakhtar Donetsk to replace Damian Lowe, who had a great year last year, but isn't at that level. Fine. To believe you have a true left back in the team. Okay. Fair as well. And I do think that Gregory and Mota are a strength for them in central midfield ahead of them. But the idea that Joseph Martinez, off the years he's had, is going to cover Pozuelo and Higuain's impact from last year is hard to believe. So you're looking at a team that they're not just set up for the summer moves. They're reliant on the summer moves. And if they don't make those moves, this is probably not a playoff team. And so now we're in a waiting period of, can they keep their head above water until they get there? And I think there's a level of trust with Phil Neville that he can sort of get the sum of the parts to fight and care and want to and play against the ball and play in transition and use Yedlin as an outlet along the right side. But this is nowhere near the team that finished last year. And I think that's what's tough to see.
Where do chances come from on this team? Doyle, I mean, Phil said at the end of last year and in signing Justin Martinez, we want to play with two forwards. We want to push numbers forward. We want to be in a better attacking team than we were last year. Goals were our problem last year. And last year, when they're at their best at the end of the season, Pozuelo was a, you know, he is just a chance creation machine in MLS, and it was Higuain. Gone, both of them. I watched this preseason game. It's preseason. Don't put too much stock in that. But they had no ability to possess the ball in dangerous places in midfield or to, it looked like, create the type of chances that Joseph in particular feeds on.
Yeah, goals weren't their problem last year. Goals against was their problem. They allowed 56 of them, which was tied for worst among playoff teams with FC Cincinnati.
Which was slightly skewed because then they lose like 5-0 twice in the first month and then sort of changed as
a bonus game. Games.
Yeah, Cincinnati, game. You mean? Yeah. I mean, and Cincinnati got better.
Miami.
Miami did too.
Well,
they both
my point
got
is
better
that Cincinnati got better with the Noboto and Miazga pickups, and there have not, like, from what I've seen, there, something like that has not happened for Inter Miami. So I'm with David. I think that looking at this team, you see a lot of issues. And I think it got worse this offseason, not just because Pozuelo and Higuain are gone, but because with Campana and Joseph up top, you're committed to playing a two, and neither of those guys defend. And you're probably going to put a number 10 in behind them. And whether it's Messi this summer or someone else, number 10s tend not to defend either. So suddenly you're playing 7v10 on one side of the ball. And that's not, that does not work. It does not work. So I'm a little bit down on Inter Miami. I think they're going to get pulled apart. I think that the way the front line, the attackers don't defend for this team is going to make it so that the midfielders have to cover too much ground, and they're going to end up chasing a lot of games.
Sixth in the Eastern Conference, says BetMGM. But 538 says, and this is low, 21% probability to make the playoffs. 21%. That's one. I think that's the lowest we've seen so far.
Yeah, it's really difficult to talk about this team with so much going on with Messi. That's the singular question.
God, what great timing from Tom there! Look at that.
I would add that there's a question
better at the end of better at the end of previews, Tom.
But like why commit to the commit to playing with a two up top? I like whether Messi's coming or not. It just doesn't make sense to me, considering what we know about the sport and what it looks like when you have three attackers who don't defend.
So, Doyle, I agree with you. My guess is Joseph on a TAM contract on talent was a deal they couldn't pass up because they have to wait for Messi. So if they hadn't done that, they probably would just have that. They wouldn't have that level of talent on the roster or gamble, whatever you want to call Joseph right now, because he's not a guarantee. That's the only belief that I have, though, in why you make that move is you can't use your DP spot. Well, and Rodolfo, we didn't even talk about Rodolfo Pizarro, by the way, but
number eight.
You have to save a DP spot for Messi, and you have to try and bridge the gap to get there. And to get Joseph on a TAM one-year deal was probably a chance they couldn't turn away from, and then you just figure it out from there. Which is not exactly – I wouldn't say that's
– That's a ringing endorsement from Dan.
Yeah, that is not a system that I would build a club around.
But if Messi comes – we'll see. TBD. Wait for the summer. All right. NYCFC. We've just got two teams left here. Here's our haiku. It's a bitter pill. Cores don't last forever. Is scouting the star? So the offseason departures. Sean Johnson, Tinnerholm, Collins, Acevedo, Maxi Morales, Eber. Thought it was going to be Santi Rodriguez. Still don't know for sure, but Ciel Merlot is saying he's coming back. When Ciel Merlot says that in South America, you usually figure that's what's going to happen. So if Santi comes back, that is huge. They go pick up Matt Fries, the young goalkeeper, to help bridge the Sean Johnson gap, and a young outside back as well. But not a ton of moves here. So Doyle, the core is gone, but scouting has always been a strength for NYCFC and City Football Group. Is this as simple as, like, if Santi comes back, they're still a playoff team? Or is it deeper than that?
The hope is that it's number one. The fear is that it's number two, right? Because the when they signed Santi on loan, the idea, it seemed to me and it seemed to the fan base, was that, okay, Maxi's getting older. We're grooming this guy for 2 years. And then when Maxi goes, Santi takes over. And now with the signing, I guess, imminent, I hope it gets done. It seems like that process is reaching its conclusion, part one of it anyway. And now part two is the big question is, like, can Santi actually run a team the way Maxi ran this team? I'm bullish on it. I think Santi's a really good player. I think having Keaton Parks healthy from the jump makes a big difference for this team, because he's like, he's a field tilt machine. He's so good at those progressive passes to feet in the pockets. It makes the job easier for a number 10. And that happens within the CFG framework, right? Like, Nick Cushing did not have an easy introduction as head coach last year. But even so, you could see that it was still largely the same team trying to play the same system. For whatever reason, there was just a massive drop off for a couple of months. But I think once you have all those boxes checked, the idea is the system becomes so reliable and second nature for most of the players that it makes a transition to a new era easier.
That's how it. Would you feel about Keaton Parks, Santi Rodriguez, James Sands midfield?
I mean, that would work real nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. His loan's over on June 30th.
His loan's over, and like, it does not look like they're like, he's not a regular for Rangers ever since Giovanni Van Bronckhorst got let go. Like, they're not going to hit that number to make the loan permanent.
So, you assume there's another move out there for him if that's what he desires. You know, I think he's shown enough in his career, but I just throw that out there. I just, with this team, in abstract, if you think spines are important to soccer teams, Sean Johnson, Alex Collins, Maxi Morales, Tati, and or Eber, whichever you want. That's straight up the middle.
Yep.
So there's a ton of talent. And everyone you talk to around MLS says you believe in NYCFC's resources, and they don't just say that in a spending way, right? That's in scouting, that's in coaching, that's in, you know, their ability to bring players in. But that is a lot to lose at one time. And then, sort of on the Santi point from Doyle, is like, how do you bring the next guy in next to who? Right? That you've lost the continuity that makes it easy for so many players to settle in. So I can understand believing Thiago Martin's a DP center back. He'll be fine next to Chanel, position for position. Matt Fries is, I think, a starting level MLS goalkeeper. Like, I think a lot of it's there, but it's a lot of movement to then try and continue to build off of.
If Santi comes back, that's, you know, again, I know that we were hitting that off the top, but like, I can't say enough how crucial that is for this team. Like, they have some nice pieces in attack. Like, it'd be even better, I think, if Talis Magno was playing on the wing rather than as a center forward, but that seems to be the plan. Like, the chance creation that's it. Like, what the level that Santi was hitting towards the second half of last year was incredible. Like, this is a player that would be potential to be dominant, but like a best 11, kind of a real difference maker in that attack. And that's the guy that you could kind of build around again, if Talis Magno doesn't hit the same heights through the center as he did on the wing, or again, whether another center forward comes at some point, which doesn't seem to be the case.
Paul Harvey says, how bad will it look in retrospect that Gabby Pereira was left off the U22 list? Is it John Duran levels of bad or worse?
I mean, to be fair, we had not seen either of those two players play. Right? Like Gabby Pereira came, I think, midseason last year, and it didn't really start putting up numbers until after voting had shut down, and the Fire for some reason just didn't play Duran until August of last year, which might have been a mistake. It could end up being that bad. I think I had him, like, we were talking about it on this show a couple of weeks ago. Like, I think I would have him top three in on the right wingers in this league. And I would probably have him top five for 22 under 22 heading into the season. Like, he's really, really good.
So that's, you think, two of the top five wingers in the league, because I assume with Kalen out, we're carrying the Kevin O'Toole flag for him.
He's left back now.
Okay.
And we did left backs the other day. We didn't even have a Kevin O'Toole mention. We're dropping the ball here.
He might be one of four starting left backs based off the depth chart of this roster.
80% to make the playoffs says 538. Second says BetMGM Eastern Conference finish. They're saying they're making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, to Tom's point, if it was any other team in the league that lost, and David's point, if there was any other team in the league that lost this much of their spine, I would be like, no, throw them in the trash for this year. I'll check in again in 2024. But CFG has done such a good job of leveraging that global network, that global scouting network to find good players. And then NYCFC as a whole has done really good over multiple managers, has done really good work developing players, whether it's high upside South American imports like Tati, Santi, Talis Magno, or whether it's guys like James Sands from the Academy, or whether it's Keaton Parks, or whether it's finding Kevin O'Toole at 30th in the draft and turning him into a really useful player at a spot of need in a playoff push. You know, like this team has done really, really good work. So it's tough to bet against them. That said, second in the East feels really high.
Feels high, but I think they're a playoff team.
So I don't have them in the playoffs right now, which I will regret later, and that's fine. I just want to throw in there, Daryl talked about youth development. They have legitimate academy players who came through their academy playing on the England youth national teams and the Argentina youth national teams. There's like some cool stuff going on for NYCFC.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the flip side, Toronto FC. Here's their haiku for 2023.
Thinking academies. TFC, exactly. That's a good
segue. Hey, Jaden Nelson, you want to stay and develop? Oh, gone, son. All right, 2023 haiku. Calcio in the six. Do big names mean big results? Sans depth, hedge your bets. You liked it? Okay, it's been a little quiet on the feedback loop today on the haikus. So it's the final haikus of the year, and you're a little burned out on poetry. I get it.
Isn't it pronounced calciao?
Calcio. Is that
we need video back just for that that Goss delivery to be a gift. That was he put everything into that.
Okay, so you go sign two big players, Lorenzo Insigne. He's making a lot of money, and Federico Bernardeschi. Who happy birthday to him! And they still finished 10th in the East. Both those guys came in the summer, had really really highs. Key offseason arrivals: Sean Johnson from NYCFC, got a top caliber goalkeeper Matt Hedges, top caliber center back. Is Victor Vasquez in? Is he officially signed? No? He is. Okay, he's in. Yeah. Adama Diamande is in. That was a throwback that I never thought I would experience again. But hey, man, Bob and Diamande are super close. Bono and Westberg gone, so that's why you need Sean Johnson. Chris Mavinga gone. He goes to LA. Crescito retires and unretires and now plays for Genoa. And then Jacob Schaffelberg and his mullet are in Nashville. Dave, playoffs or bust? Or I mean, like to me, it's like this team is—it's a boom or bust situation. Yeah. I feel like
it's trophies or bust. Like playoffs is below what you're talking about. You've set record numbers in the transfers you made, and everyone is in the same age profile, past the age of 30. So there is no future build on this. Matt Hedges is not a signing for the future. Michael Bradley is not there for the future. Bernardeschi, Insigne, Dio. Up top, none of this is for the future. It's all for right now. So it's trophy or bust. And they're fortunately for them, they're in six different competitions or whatever the number is, right? There's different ways to go about that, but that's all that will be acceptable this year. You got one year where, okay, they came in mid-season. Bob didn't have the players he wanted, didn't have the time. Fine. That's last year, which I don't even think every TFC fan would agree is fine, but we are where we are. This year, it would be unacceptable. Now, what's scary about this team is how thin they are. And again, what I just said at the age they are. And if you have any center back go down, any central midfielder go down, one of the two wingers goes down, you do not have a player, I think, that is starter level to replace them, or at least to replace them for a long time. I'm curious to see what Bob does with the few young players they let stay, like DeAndre Kerr and Kosi Thompson. And you know, we all hope
Marshall
to
Ruddy.
Kill Marshall Ruddy for a sizable amount of time because Richie Lirea's loan will end and there's question marks at that position. But yeah, this is trophy or bust team, and their top end talent is the reason why. And they've already proven they can. Right? Bernardeschi and Insigne showed they can be difference makers in this league. Does it lead to winning? That question is still up in the air.
how big of difference makers do you expect them to be, Doyle, over the course of a full season? Matt Skinner hit us up, and Matt is all over extra time content. Shout out to Matt. Should there be more hype around Insigne or Bernadeschi for gas theorem type explosive seasons, says Matt?
I don't know if it should be. I mean, sure, I guess like both. You could talk me into either guy being an MVP caliber player. Bernadeschi, I think, was MVP caliber in his 2 months in the league. He looked really, really good. Insigne, not quite as good. It's kind of underrated that both these guys helped defensively so much, not because they were winning the ball back, but because if you watched Toronto play in the first half of the year versus how they played in the second half of the year, they just stopped turning the ball over stupidly in stupid parts of the field. Like having professional wingers who can do that really helps on both sides of the ball. But in order for this team to be a silverware type of team, it feels like they got 13 players on the team roughly, and they need all 13 of them to go through the entire season without getting injured and without getting old. And like that, you went through it, right? Like Sean Johnson will be 34 in May. Hedges turns 33, I think, next month. Dio's already 33. Michael Bradley's 36, 37. Insigne's in his 30s. Bernadeschi's the kid. He's like 29. You know, Marc-Anthony Kay and Jonathan Osorio are good players, but both of whom had injuries over the last few years, and Kay has not looked like what he was in 2020. It's been a couple of years now.
I will say I'm excited for a Marc-Anthony Kay chip on the shoulder season. Like, when he's on, he's fun. With these pieces around him, it could be special, but we have to see it.
52. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say they need, like, a combined 60 starts from Kay and Osorio. Like there is absolutely no margin for error. Like,
and they need need that from Bernadeschi and Insigne too, and they need that from Hedges and Rosted.
Yeah.
You know, like you go through the whole thing, man.
I feel like if as long as one of Insigne and Bernadeschi is there, there's the other one can be leaned on to carry them. But like again, if one of Kay or Osorio is hurt, the whole thing topples.
3% to win MLS Cup, 52% to make the playoffs. BetMGM has them 12th in the East. I'm just gonna ask this: boom or bust?
I think bust. I think the injuries, it's like the lack of depth is just such a killer. I don't see how they overcome that.
Any booms? No booms. All right. Well, we'll see, Toronto. There you go. That's our season team previews. We did them all. I have to go back and write haikus because Dave dropped the ball, but I respect, you know, it's not your thing. I get it. You know, it's okay.
ChatGPT, can you just plug him into that?
Yeah, but ChatGPT doesn't. We're going to use that to make some ridiculous predictions, but it doesn't understand syllables. I mean, I barely do. I'm sitting in my house clapping for these things, but I understand it better than ChatGPT. All right, top
good
five right backs.
Those claps though in the new house, you know.
Oh, exactly. That screws me up because you know, really one or two, you don't know. It's coming back at you. All right, top five right That's backs. Let's ghost. Finish. Don't even start with me on that. I'm easily creeped out, as the city of Cincinnati knows. Okay, top five right backs. We had number one. We did this as a group. Ryan Hollingshead. We think he's the best right back in MLS of LAFC. Number two, Aaron Herrera. Nice little move for Montreal to go snatch him out of RSL. I don't think he was number two in the league last year. I think on ability, he can be there. He was 2 years ago, and Montreal are banking on him returning to that place. Olivier Mbaizo could be number one on this list. We have him number three. Was really spectacular for the Union last year, the Cameroonian International. Alex Roldan at four, maybe not a vintage Roldan season, but still a very good one. A lot of the chance creation for the Sounders coming through him on the right side. DeAndre Yedlin, five, and then a strong group outside of that. Shaq Moore on pedigree and fee should probably be in this top five. Wasn't quite there last year in MLS. Richie Larea, we know his talent. Julian Gressel, same there. Brandon Bai, some guys that came in. Giovanni Jesus for FC Dallas out of Brazil, spent some coin on him. Santi Arias, I would think that Cincinnati expects him to be in this top five by the end of the season. His talent obviously would say that he would be in that group. And then Juan David Mosquera in Portland is another one to watch. So there's right back. How about your top five D-mids? Doyle, we tasked you with this. Give us your top five.
I for the first three, I just went for the three guys that we had in our all MLS best 11, second 11 third 11 last year. So I went Jose Martinez 1, Victor Wanyama 2, and then Ilya number 3, though I think last year I had Wanyama first team. The issue there is with the switch from Wilfred Nancy's system to Hernan Losada's, I just think Nance's system fits Wanyama a little bit better. But still, like, he's been so good for Montreal. I have him top three pretty easily. You guys bullied me into putting Noboda fourth. I love Obina Noboda. I thought he was a huge difference maker for that Cincinnati team. I think the way that they play, he's actually more of a box-to-box destroying ball advancing number eight. With Moreno sitting a little bit deeper last year and orchestrating a little bit more. But like I said, you guys bullied me into it. And either way, Noboda was a fantastic player. Would not shock me at all if he ended up in best 11 this year. And then fifth, Andres Kubas for Vancouver. He went under the radar for a lot of people just because the Caps got off to such a bad start that they never really got into the playoff race until the very end. And a big reason that they were in it at the very end was Kubas's two-way ability. And you know, he's part, their recruitment has been so good over the past couple of years, between Gall, Pedro Vite, getting Julian Gressel from within the league. But like, Kubas is he is the best of those. And he's another guy who, with a full season in what is hopefully a little more coherent system, it would not shock me if he was best 11. He's a Diego Chara type player. And then behind that five, so it's Martinez, Wanyama, Ilya, Noboda, Kubas is the five. And like, just missed is Keaton Parks, Joao Paulo. Those two guys, just because of injuries and missed time, if they play the full season, they could easily jump into the five. Diego Chara, another year of his greatness. Brugman from the Galaxy. Jack Price, healthy again. And then the kid from Orlando City, Cesar Araújo.
It's a good list. There's a lot of quality there.
The Joao Paulo is the obvious one, right? If he's healthy.
That's the one, like, he would arguably be number one.
He would be in there. I would add, I agree with all the names Doyle said. I would add to them, I would add Grueso. Brought in as a DP for San Jose. I think Brugman's a great one because he played probably at that level last year. So if he can do it for the full year, I'm obviously a Ruiz fan out at RSL. And Edelman. If he's the guy, and we don't know, U20 World Cup, whatever else happens, stuff. But you know, I got to shout out a homegrown kid and obviously a Red Bull 2-1 at the same time. So
he's going to look good in the yellow streetwear jersey, right? It's really his vibe. Should be good. You mentioned Brooks Lennon. We forgot him in right back.
What do you want?
No, just throwing it out there. Just, you know, just letting you know. Just from one New Yorker to another, you know, whatever it is that we're describing.
Weeby, you live in New Jersey, man.
I didn't say I was a New Yorker. All right. Anyway.
Edelman's from New Jersey.
Oh, he's my people then.
Yeah,
he's south of the earth.
NJ.
Okay. Now I know. That's my boy. Look, we don't have time for the mailbag today. We have some great stuff, though. Thomas, who drops in my DMs with heat, we will get to you. Tom Kostvis has a really good email about assigning him a team up in Milwaukee. Also, he's asking us to name his third child, which is an honor that we will take to heart. And then we'll have another one, Derek Pemberton. He and his teenage son are looking for a team ahead of the 2023 season. So, guys, we will have you. Don't worry about it. We'll talk to you on Tuesday and assign a team when we go to Apple TV and YouTube. In the meantime, big thanks to Tom. Back after a few pints over this
match. Back with the lads. David's chuffed.
Yes, David Goss. And
he's a true journo. We don't let journos in.
Proper journo.
Exactly. Matt Doyle. And of course, Anders entertaining us in the chat. All right. We will see you on Tuesday. Adios, everybody.